And hello, welcome to Kukubri Book Week podcast with me, Chris Walker, and Jerry Hassan is here. And today our victim, well, is Ian Patrick, or should I say Ian Robinson, because Ian, you've changed your name now, haven't you? You were Ian Patrick, the author, and yeah. Now you're Ian Robinson, the author.
Well, I haven't strictly changed it, but I mean, my full name is Ian Patrick Robinson.
Ah.
So when I started out writing, I thought I will publish under the name Ian Patrick.
Right.
And that's how it happened.
Okay. So under Ian Patrick, I've read two of your books. One is Rubicon and the other is in my hand here, Stoned Love. Rubicon, Jerry, I left on a cruise ship somewhere in between Singapore and Bali.
That's extraneous information.
Because I thought it was such a good... I tweeted, actually, Ian, didn't I?
You did.
With a photograph of it, said, I've enjoyed that book so much, I've left it on a cruise ship.
And it's lovely to think it's travelling.
It's travelling in a cruise ship library around the world. So, but I enjoyed both of them. They're amazing books. Now, you live locally here in Kukubri, or just outside of Kukubri?
I live locally, yeah.
Yeah. And how long have you been in the area?
6 years.
6 years, okay. Yeah. And you've made this area your home, as Jerry has?
Yes.
As I have?
Yep.
Can I ask you then, what took you to this area? What brought you here?
Well, my main career was in the police. I was in the Metropolitan Police, and I was in there for 27 years. And that came to an end due to ill health, which we can talk about as we go on, if you like. But anyway, to cut a long story short, it was one of those moments where my wife and I discussed, look, you know, we've got an opportunity to do something here. We can either stay around the same area, when obviously housing prices were just going through the roof. We had to adapt a property, you know, so we were looking at a through floor lift, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, we just thought, well, let's just do it. Let's move, and let's move to Scotland. That's literally how it happened.
Okay. And then to this bit part of Scotland, this neck of the woods, what was there?
Yeah, well, basically we'd been on holiday here and we liked it. We love the community, we love the area, and we felt as a family it would be a great place for us to settle down.
It is. Everybody that comes here just falls in love with it. It's a special sense of community, isn't there?
Yeah, there really is, actually. There really is. And even down south, we had a sense of community, undoubtedly. But then you come here, where obviously generations have lived and grown up, and then you really get a greater depth of knowledge of what community is.
So where did life start for you then, Ian? Where were you born? Where was home originally?
Well, I was born in Italy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm from a forces family. So then...
Where were you born in Italy? Just out of curiosity.
I'll not say. I was born in Italy. You know, I guess the thing is, got to be a bit, you know, I level with you. You just got to be conscious about what you're willing to put out.
Yes,
personal
absolutely.
Details in in public. That's all.
Yeah.
But so I was born in Italy, and then we travelled abroad, various different places, and then settled mainly in Nottingham.
Mm-hmm.
And
then obviously you went into the police force straight away, or were you?
No, I was, so I left school at 16 and then went to the civil service. So I was an admin assistant in a benefits office.
So what sort of period this time wise?
This is mid-80s.
That's a good time for music, Jerry. It was mid-80s.
Yeah. But this is a time when with unemployed, a lot of people went into things like the civil service, a lot of young people.
Yeah, I mean, I had no choice. Yeah. As in, I left school with nothing, no qualifications whatsoever. Well, I mean, I did, but like nothing to write home about. And then it was a case of I needed to work. And that was there. And, you know, that's... And, you know, I've always kind of worked... So when even during school holidays, I would be working on a fruit farm. You know, it's just one of those things. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, but at some point, what you say, civil service is not for you, or along comes a police, you know, opportunity?
Yeah, I realised that there was a lady I worked with in the benefits office whose husband was in the police in Nottingham at the time, and she'd often talk about what he, you know, kind of... him and his life and all that kind of thing. And he brought me in a recruitment
leaflet
thing, you know, like this. So that was it. I mean, I started washing the local police cars when I was probably, I don't know, 14, 15. And then once I was old enough to apply for the job, I did the entrance exam and I could go anywhere in the country. That name. But also the other part of it was self-doubt. You know, I mean, I left school with nothing. And, you know, I'm saying that I've written a novel and it's going to go out there and that is daunting in itself.
Yeah.
You know, that is daunting in itself. And, you know, some people, they can cope with all that and they just go, well, I've written it and I'm going to put it out there and I'm really proud of it and all the rest of it. I was very proud of Rubicon. I'll always be proud of Rubicon. It's a fantastic book and it was a fantastic debut. And, you know, I would say publicly thanks to Fahrenheit Press, Chris there, for taking it on, because he took a risk. And, you know, in many ways, we wished it would have paid off a little bit better, as in, but, you know, you just never know in this industry. But, yeah, there was a lot of self-doubt there.
I mean, it's something I think most writers know, and if they don't, I think they should know. Tell me a bit about the self-doubt and how you managed that a bit.
Well, I don't think you ever do. I don't think you ever do. You know, I mean, I'm managing it by carrying on writing, you know, and seeing people feedback that they're enjoying my books is, you know...
be a tremendous feeling.
It is a tremendous feeling, but you have to realise then, God, you know, so I did write those. Because there are some... I mean, I can remember downloading one of my books just to make sure that it read okay. And I got like... I think it might have even been Stoned Love or Fool's Gold, one of the two, but I was reading through it and all of a sudden I had to stop myself going, Jesus Christ, this is great, but I wrote this.
Yeah.
You know, that's not coming from a point of arrogance. It's just coming from a point of forgetting what you've written. Like, you know, like you suddenly remind yourself, God, that came out of my head.
You always, to an extent, read your own text differently from other people's text, but reading it then practically it's one step removed,
which
maybe appreciate it in another way.
Yes, it made me appreciate the vastness of the mind and the brain, really, when it comes to creativity.
And you mentioned there, you know, when you read back books. Because you've written 9 books now altogether, haven't you?
Yeah, so 4 are published.
When you're on, say, book 8, and you start writing, do you suddenly go, oh, hang on, I've covered that scene in a previous book. Do you ever have those sort of moments?
No, because with the crime fiction, I start from a point of deciding what the crime's going to be and then just making it up. So I don't really draw anything else. The only thing is, in the Batford series, there's quite a lot of one-liners in there.
Yeah.
So I had a list of one-liners and I'd just score them off if I'd already used them in a book, because otherwise they will just crop up.
Yeah, well, we interviewed John Dean, and I know when we get to the book festival next year on Monday the 27th of February, The Walk on the Dark Side, John will be there. But when we introduced John Dean, he said exactly the same as you. I start with a blank piece of paper and I don't know where I'm going.
Yeah.
I find that's quite incredible. So where does it just come as you write it? And is it like a momentum, like a horse galloping? You say, oh, I'm off and away now.
Well, normally you come up with something sparks an idea that you would want to explore. And that's for me. So Rubicon started off as a short story. The first few chapters, short story for a writing competition. Mm-hmm. So it's not, Rubicon wasn't the first book I wrote. A book called Artificial was the first book I wrote, which is kind of commitments-esque take on a guy growing up in the 80s living at home with his mum, right? 90,000 words. It was an absolute disaster. there was an author friend of mine who agreed to read it, and thankfully, and this is where brutally honest feedback is invaluable to a writer, because she saved me a heap load of embarrassment. If I'd have submitted that book, it would have been very embarrassing.
And I know when we get to Book Week, which we're all very excited about next February, that you'll be sort of talking crime writing, and those evenings go a little bit more in depth onto you know, your technique of crime writing and what crime writing is all about. But I just want to touch on, if I can, when you got poorly, because you have been poorly.
Yeah. So I've got muscular dystrophy, which mainly affects my legs. So I didn't realise what was happening. So I was in the police at the time when I discovered this, and this has got to be like over 10 years ago now. And colleagues of mine would comment when I was walking upstairs like I was limping.
Uh-huh.
So what's wrong with your back? There's nothing wrong with my back.
Really?
And then I began to get like, so getting on the top of escalators, going down into the underground, I felt wobbly, nervous, like I was going to fall.
Oof.
So this is the incredible power of the brain. I had no idea what was going on. Like, I felt reasonably strong, but my brain was telling me, you shouldn't be up this high because you could fall.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right? Now, bearing in mind, I've been policing London for that time. That's, you know, way over 2 decades. Never had this problem at all. So it kind of just came out of the blue. And then stepping down off curbs, I might stumble. So I had a blood test done and I had a muscle biopsy done at the Royal Free. And it turns out that I've got holes in my muscles that I wasn't aware of. And this is probably, normally muscular dystrophies are genetic, but mine isn't. So they haven't seen it before.
Gosh.
Yeah. So I use full leg bracing. I use a wheelchair. I use an off-road mobility scooter. Anything I can to keep me up and moving.
Yeah.
Gosh. I just kind of use.
That's great. Yeah. Incredible. And so how long has that been, did you say?
Well, I think it's probably been my entire life.
Really?
I mean, the irony of it was that when I was in training school, apparently my nickname was Billy Whiz. Because yeah. no matter how much effort I put in, I was never running any quicker. So chasing suspects was an absolute disaster. Because I never catch them.
Yeah.
You know, never catch them unless they fell over. You know? And now looking back, you realise why. Because I was putting a lot, you know, you'd really be trying, my hardest to sprint. But, you know, the muscles would seize, they'd give out. But I never knew then what was going on, because I still had muscular strength.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about it. You had to in the police. You can't not have.
And is muscular dystrophy, is it genetic? Is it?
Well, it's meant to be genetic. But so the ones like Duchenne's and the ones that they know about are genetic. But they haven't seen mine. So I've been in the genome project and they've researched it all and they've done all genetic testing. They don't know, they can't name it.
Okay.
But, you know, the bottom line is I'm one of the lucky ones.
Yeah.
You know, I'm here, I'm sat with you. I'm not having to be, you know, have my breathing assisted by a machine. You know, I can, you know, none of those things. I have a reasonable independence. So, yeah. You know, I'm thankful.
It's
a lot worse.
Is it true then, Ian, is part of that experience what brought you out of the police and into writing?
Well, yeah. I mean, I realised that the role I was in, I was a DS, detective sergeant on a covert team. And, you know, in the end, I couldn't just sit behind a desk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody could tell me in the medical profession how long my walking would last. So, you know, I had to take a decision and just say, well, I'm, you know, what do I do? And I just thought, well, I can come out of the job now on ill health, on a full pension, and, you know, maybe explore other avenues of work where I wasn't so fatigued and putting a lot of pressure on myself physically. And that's what I decided to do.
Music's a big thing in your titles and yeah. references to the yeah. Stone Roses and yeah. some of their greatest songs. So yeah. tell us about that.
Music has been a huge influence in my life. I mean, Big Country, mm-hmm. Stuart Adamson, mm-hmm. like he was just an inspiration to me. I mean, like he got me through some dark times as a kid, that Big Country's music did. And I think from there, you know, I've got a very broad musical taste. I mean, there's not a day goes by I'm not listening to music.
Mm.
So, and it inspires me. The music and lyrics inspire my writing.
Yeah.
So I draw a lot from the music and then apply it to story. So almost writing cinematically. So, you know, if I knew how to produce and direct film, I think my brain would really work for that. Because I'd have the soundtrack all there. Yeah, I could visually. Yeah. I'm a photographer as well. I can
yeah.
set pictures, photographs up, yeah. pictures and stuff, and I can see all that. I try to bring that into my writing. So when the reader's yeah. reading it, they're they're there, they're immersed, and they can kind of sense in their own brains what and interpret it in the way they want.
That's great. So tell us, apart from Big Country and the Stone Roses, because that's a very, very specific sort of period, anything else that like really lights your candle musically?
I love Interpol. They're great. I'm going to see Placebo in Glasgow on the 3rd. So I love them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, also I like classical music, funk, soul, blues. All those. I mean, there's some. So I've written a book called Driftwood that is currently on submission. And there was a band called the 1004s.
Oh, right.
Yeah. They influenced that book. There's no doubt about it. And they feature in that book. Where There'll Be Fireworks is another Scottish band who are just phenomenal. I mean, like, you listen to their music and you kind of think, woo, you know, why aren't these people getting a wider audience? You know, and we all know why. It's like Spotify, it's kind of algorithms, it's all those kind of things. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily promote the music that should be getting promoted,
no.
In my humble opinion, anyway. Yeah. But, you know, the beauty of that platform equally is that you can explore it and discover all new different stuff.
Yeah.
So it's...
And all those bands on there, on Spotify and on Apple Music, etc., these days are self-published and making diddly squat from Amazon and Spotify.
Yeah.
Let's turn that around, Ian, from the point of an author nowadays. Yeah. I mean, a lot of authors, you're lucky you have a publishing deal with a recognised publisher.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are self-publishing now and putting it up onto Kindle, etc. Yeah. That's just for the love of it, I suspect, because there's no money there, is there?
It's a bit of a brutal game. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no doubt about that. So if you're going into it for the money, you can be extremely lucky, or, you know, you've got you're in it for the long haul. You've just got to keep writing and keep producing the books, build that readership up, and, you know, hopefully then when your latest title comes out, if someone new picks it up, they might go right back to the beginning again of what you've written. But I mean, career wise, I think that I remember seeing a figure that the average author earns £10,000 a year. Uh-huh. I'm not the average author,
no.
You know, and that's not in the extreme of it, you know. That's just the reality of it. But once you start writing, the stories will keep coming up, and you have to. I have to write them, but then it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be commercially viable, or that agents or publishers are necessarily going to want them. But that doesn't mean that the story isn't good and that the writing isn't good. But it is a business. It is an industry. The good thing about the likes of Spotify and being able to self-publish, because I've done the self-publishing with How the Wired Weep, is that you get to retain all your rights.
Yeah.
So you then exploit those rights if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise you could sign them all over to a publisher and none of them are getting worked with.
Yeah. And I suppose you write for the love of writing rather than write in the hope of getting it in front of a television producer, don't you? I mean, if it gets in front of a TV producer and a series is made, bingo, or that's just good luck, isn't it? Good fortune.
Yeah, I mean, I had that with Rubicon.
Uh-huh.
So that got in front of the BBC before the pandemic, and it was optioned for 2 years for a 6-part TV series.
Wow.
Yeah, it went to 2 BAFTA-nominated writers, outlined it. But then the pandemic killed it, basically. And the BBC tightened their belts. They decided to move their commissioning money onto something else. But, you know, I spoke to the writers and they were very... They're like, old projects never die, so it's not totally written off.
It'll come back again.
Yeah, and I think, there's, but also, you know, you've got audio now, audio books, they're a big thing. I'd like to see some of my books on audio. Mm-hmm. That'd be wonderful.
Crime, but there's lots of other genres of writing out there that people are suddenly finding somehow. And do you think that's through the pandemic and lockdown? Is that where podcasting's taken off from? People have been sat at home on their own, maybe?
I think so. And it takes good people like yourselves to set these things up and give your time and invite people like me on. So I'm very thankful for it, to be fair, because there are many writers you can have here. So it is a privilege. You know, it is a privilege.
We're privileged, Jerry, to have him here. Aren't we?
It's a Monday morning. I was looking forward to this from yesterday, and I was thinking I'll manage home watching the Dreadwords World Cup. You know, I had a column to deliver for today. I wrote it yesterday. You know, and it's nice. And there's something about books as well. I think you know, books come in many, many forms, which I like. But I also, I personally really like the idea of physical books.
Yes,
I don't want to live in a world where I would have got the Kindle if it took over was a bad idea. But the Kindle is a choice, like Spotify, like all these things, like Bandcamp. If it's a choice, it adds to things.
Yes, but also it gives the individual choice. So, for example, I could choose to self-publish one of my books, not give it to a publisher. And equally with music, with writing, you're not having somebody else say whether you're. Creativity is worthy of putting in front of the public.
No.
Because the chances are it is. You know, and put it there. And now we can do the self-publishing route, we can even do our own audiobooks. Yep. We can even, like, musically, you can go onto these SoundCloud, you can go onto Spotify and put your music out there and let people out there decide whether they want to listen to it or not. Don't have someone sat up there looking at it from a purely commercial point of view, because that's what it boils down to. Is this going to sell? Is this going to make me money or not? And it could be the best writing there is, it could be the great, it could be wonderful, but if they can't sell that, then naturally they're not going to take it.
You said earlier, when we were just talking before recording this, that I like the idea. I used to like the idea of the world without gatekeepers, and then I realised, you know, that's the road to hell on some level, you know. Yes. Because we live in an age of massive cultural production and noise, and yet how do we find the good stuff? You said before, though, when you write, your wife partner reads most of your things before you submit.
Yes, she does. Yeah.
So you've got some gatekeeping going on, you know.
I have. And I think you've got to have that. You've got to either have. You know, I'm very fortunate to have my wife who will agree to read it. And there's also, I have a little core group of beta readers who I'll send my stuff out to, some at an early stage, just so I get an idea whether I'm on the right path or not. Because at the end of the day, you know, it's my choice to write these stories. But equally, I'm asking a reader to invest their precious time in life to read it. So it's got to be the best I can produce.
Yeah.
And, you know, otherwise I'm doing another person a disservice if I just produce crap and chuck it out there. And, you know, in the end, it's like, you know, if you choose to read my stuff, that is a privilege. Like, there's so many other authors you could be reading. Mm-hmm. There's so many other people, like, musically you could be listening to, any of that kind of thing. So it's got to be, hand on heart, the best I could produce at this stage in my writing life.
Yeah.
You know? Because naturally, you're going to, hopefully, I'm going to progress, I'm going to get stronger, I'm going to, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, some of my later work may surpass some of the earlier stuff, but that's natural, because you learn, you develop, your style changes maybe, or you get it tighter, you know, you grow, you learn a lot more about it. And so that's kind of what I do enjoy. So although I have written a lot of crime, I wouldn't necessarily now say that I'm a crime writer, because I know I can explore other genres.
Yeah,
just as strongly.
So with 4 books out,
yeah,
9 written,
yeah.
When are the other 5 due to be dripped out? Or,
well, you know, again, you know, I'm trying for an agent at the moment, and let's see if that works out. That'll continue into next year. If it doesn't, then I've got choices to make, really. Mm-hmm. You know, whether I decide to go down the route on my own. My current publisher, The Book Folks, are superb. You know, the Nash and Moretti series that they're putting out is I'm really thankful for. They've been very patient with me equally, because I'm kind of partway through a 4th at the moment, but I haven't finished that. So, it really just works out what direction I want to go in.
That was Ian Patrick speaking to Jerry Hassan and myself when we interviewed him for Kukubri Book Week podcast. Huge thank you to Ian for joining us. Hope you've enjoyed this podcast. You can hear this and many others at Kukubri Book Week podcast, available on Spotify, Apple, and Podbean. That's where you'll find us. Until next time, thank you very much indeed. Bye-bye.